become very important to me, I am, and actually it's the way that I met Linda. I'll share a little bit more about, I'll share it now. At our very first Woodstock, Linda, the bear out of the way. I don't know if you can move it very well. At the very first Woodstock, I met Linda. I had met Bob many times, but I had not met Linda. And Dick and I and Bob and Linda all went through the light show. The first Woodstocks were down at Callaway Gardens. And they told you to turn your headlights off. So Dick couldn't see very well. And he almost ran off a bridge entirely. And the car was kind of teetering on the edge, and so we managed to get out of the car. Dick wasn't sure he was going to make it because his wheel was off the, but he managed to. And we found this very nice lady who came by, offered to give Linda and I a ride, and so Linda and I jumped in the back seat of a car of somebody we didn't know, and proceeded to go through the rest of the light show. Well, they had the back windows down because they wanted to hear the music as they went along. And we were freezing by the time we got back, went in and had a bowl of soup, and have been friends ever since. So and part of the reason we originally called this the butterfly meeting was because we were meeting at Callaway, and after the meeting every year, we would go to the Cecil Day Butterfly Conservatory. So that was part of the way it happened. Sonia told you about the symbol. My original sponsor, Ruth F., who has passed since, was actually there when they voted on the symbol. And she loved her butterflies. And so she had, it was between the butterfly and the triangle with a circle on it, and there was a third one. It was a coffee cup. And so, and actually, she gave me all of her coffee cup prototypes for that she got at conference before she died. There was a whole group that were really pushing for the coffee cup, so they made up little symbols of the coffee cup and passed them around at conference. But the butterfly, the transition of the butterfly, is definitely part of this. To begin our session today, I'm going to introduce Linda, who I love very much and is a friend and my sponsor.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Linda Bazans, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. It's really, well, first of all, thank you, Barbara and Dick, and you. He never likes the way the microphone is. Would you like to come and fix it for me? Why don't I start all over? I'd like to thank Barbara and Dick and Sonia for the lovely song. And it's really, really good to be back here. Last year, we were scheduled to come, or asked to come, I think is the way it went. And it was our 50th wedding anniversary. And we had a big party with our family, and it was just very, very special. And we got married on a Saturday, and the 2nd of December was on the Saturday. And so we did not come. We regretted not being here, but we were supposed to be where we were, celebrating with our kids and Bob's, well, our family. And so anyway, it's been, is it 2 years? We were talking about that last night. 3 years that we've seen each other. But we keep in touch, obviously, by phone. So sponsorship is very important to both of us. We have no format here. We have no idea what we're going to be doing. So just come and wing it with us, please. I told God this morning, I said, let's just have fun and see what happens. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen. We talked about using the principles of the program during the holidays, which, of course, we should be using or trying to use the principles of the program every single day of our lives in all of our affairs, which is what we are taught. I don't think it's any more special at Christmas, although maybe at Christmas I'm a little bit more willing. Sometimes I'm not quite as willing, but at Christmas my heart seems to open up a little bit differently. So we'll see where it goes. We're just going to bounce off each other. And I made a remark not too long ago that I realized that if I stayed in gratitude and stayed in the day that I was in, that everything was fine. And you know how you say something and all of a sudden you go, wow, that's really true. I wish I could do that all the time. Well, I can't. But I try to. And once I put it into words, it started to become more purposeful for me. I mean, I've heard one day at a time for years. You know, stay in the moment. I've heard, you know, be grateful. The more grateful you are, the better your day is. But I sort of became more purposeful of staying in the day and just being grateful. And then I started looking at what we're supposedly going to be doing right now. And I think the principles that are connected with each step are somewhat up to interpretation. I've seen different lists, and they go back and forth to different things. But I always think of step one as being either acceptance or surrender or both. And when I surrender, I have to accept what's going on. So to me, those are very, very similar things. Acceptance is very much about being in the moment and not getting into the fear of what's going on, but it's also getting my ego out of the way. We all have a plan for how we would like either the day or a circumstance or whatever to be, and that creates an expectation, and that always gets me in trouble. When I have an expectation of how it's supposed to be, I know right off the bat I'm going to be disappointed. Maybe that's even what's happening today, I don't know. But when I have that expectation, I set myself up and I leave God out, because it becomes my plan. That's all it is my plan. And most of the time I don't share my plan, especially with my family or my husband, and therefore they don't have the script. And as a result of not having the script, I am going to be disappointed. Marcy, my butterfly sponsor, who loved butterflies, in fact, these colors reminded me so much of her when Barbara sat down. You know, she always said, honey, they don't have the script. Why would you expect that they would meet your needs or do what you want? But see, I didn't even want to tell them the script. I wanted them to know. I wanted them to instinctively know that what would please me, therefore carry it out. How many years do you think I was disappointed with that plan? And I can still go there. I can go there on Mother's Day and on my birthday. On those 2 days, I normally have antennae that are about this big. On Mother's Day and my birthday, they become about 6 feet long. And you can't help but brush against them and offend me. No matter what you do, you can't help but offend me. That is not the way I want to live. And that's not the way I've been taught to live. And that's not the way I'm trying to live. I'm trying to live in acceptance of what's going on in the moment. And when I do that, my moments are actually golden. And when I forget that, they're not so good. In fact, sometimes they're sort of crappy. But so, you know, we admit we're powerless. Powerless. I can't do anything about whatever's happening. And, you know, for years I had to, and we all have to do it around alcoholism. But it also becomes around our lives and the days that we're living in. It isn't just about alcoholism. It just isn't about the illness. I think it's about living in cooperation with the plan and letting go of our plan. So anyway, if we live in the moment, I did a thing with my sponsor, and she said, let's do a New Year's resolution around your program. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, I always do that, and I do something that I want to intentionally put into the works for the next year. And I said, well, give me an example. And she said, well, you know, maybe it's, I want to start letting go of some of my resentments. Maybe it's that I want to start appreciating everything I see God in and seeing God in more things. I said, oh. She said, well, why don't you and I do it together this year? And I said, great. She said, we'll do a step a month. I said, okay. So step January was step one, you know, powerless, unmanageable. It was really interesting how I could hardly wait for February. I mean that because I felt this heavy, and she said, you have to stay in that step for that month. And 31 days of powerlessness and unmanageability was very, very tough for me. And so then I got to step two, and then the hope was added. You know, if we live in the disease, or we live in the muck, or the sadness of our lives, we're going to be nothing but sad. Because you're not letting anything in. You're just being sad and miserable. How are you? Oh, not so good today. You know, and those words, they don't even come out of my mouth anymore because all they do is keep me mired. They keep me stuck. I have to let go of that. So anyway, when we did it, we went to step two in February. And step two was when hope came in. If we live in step one, we're going to jump off that bridge. It's not a good place to be. We have to admit powerlessness and we have to move on. And the steps move us out of it immediately. And in step two, not only do we have hope added, but we have help added. And so now we're in hope. And hope's a great place to be. Hope is expecting, wanting it to be better, wanting to be better in the moment. And so that's where step two comes in. And then we're lucky enough to move into step three. And in step three, which is made a decision to turn our will and our power over to the care of God, in step three, I believe we work in cooperation. So what I say to God, you know, I said it today, you know, let me cooperate with your plan for this, how it should unfold. Let me have your words. I don't know if I've got them yet, but I think I do. I think I'm speaking what God would like me to tell you today about what I've done and how I've done it. And so when we're in step three, you know, we come to believe and we have a faith, and this is where God comes in, or our higher power. And our higher power, with our higher power, we are wonderful. Without God or our higher power, we aren't so good. Because something is lacking. I think as human beings, we are meant to have a place filled by a higher power or by a God. And if we don't have that, we're going through life sort of bumping along. And even if you have a higher power, or a God that you believe in, or a power greater than you, if you're like me, many times you forget about it. And you go back to ego, and you go back to running to run the show. And when I'm trying to run the show, one more time, I'm disappointed, it doesn't work out very well, I'm trying to stuff that round peg into that square hole. And I keep trying, and muscle doesn't do it. You know, what does it is letting go, accepting, having hope, and turning it over to God. So the principles are guidelines to success. If we want to be successful in life, we need to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And if you want the people you live with to be happy, they're going to be a whole lot happier when you're practicing these principles in all of your affairs. Because you be kind, you become kinder, you become more gentle. The rough edges seem to go away. And you live life in cooperation. So when I get to step three, what I say basically is to my higher power, how do I cooperate with your plan for me today? What do you have for me? And then can I show up for it in a way that I'm not only accepting, but I'm kind and I'm gentle to all the people who I will come in contact today.
want to take over? Should I keep going?
Do your part. I don't do mine. You can do your part.
Oh, so I should, the whole thing.
Whatever that is. Because I'm not going to make it through the whole step, I don't think. But so anyway, then you get to step four. And for me, step four was about honesty. I had to get honest with myself. I had to find out really who I was, and I had to accept that person. And I was very much afraid to take step four, and I had no intention when I came to the program ever doing it, so it wasn't even, it was a moot point. Because I had been raised a Catholic, and I didn't need to do step four. I had done lots of confessions, thank you. And I was done with that. Well, not done with it, but I was not doing it here again. And then I was definitely not doing step five. Admitting all these things to someone else. And finally, after 7 years I was in this program, I finally decided. I was falling apart. I was an absolute mess. I didn't know where I was. I didn't like my life. I didn't like who I was. And we went to a meeting that particular Sunday. And I mean, I was at this point for probably about a year. But I wasn't, I was only working the steps I liked. And I didn't like a lot of them. And so anyway, we went to a meeting and we came home. And I at that point in my life, I just would start crying. When the speaker would start speaking, it was like I couldn't keep, and I like to look good, boy. And looking good from the front of the pulpit, we always had to sit right there, you know. I started to cry, and I didn't look good, and I knew I had to make a change. And we went home, and I said to Bob, I'm dying. I'm dying, and I don't know what to do. And he said so gently, honey, why don't you work all the steps? It's not a smorgasbord. And if he had said that any other time in my life, I think I would have said something that we've been taught to say. You stay out of my program, I'll stay out of your program. Or some cute little quip. But that particular day, I was done. And I called my sponsor and I said, I'm going to do a fourth and a fifth step. And she said, she didn't say it's about time, I've been waiting for you, any of that. She just said, good idea. So I started with step one. She said, you will start with step one and you will become current. And she said, gave me some names, and I made an appointment the next day, and I started with one, and in 3.5 weeks, I had done my fifth step. And for me, that was a sense of humility. I think you could go and say, you know, that step seven is humility, but for me, that's when I had to be so humble to be willing to really look at who I was, who I am. And up until then, too, I blamed everything in my life on alcoholism. Therefore, I blamed everything on my husband. When things weren't so good, well, you know, if I weren't living with him, or if we didn't have alcoholism, or, you know, and we had sobriety. My husband got sober on our honeymoon. So I was living in sobriety, but I was living in alcoholism, and I was living in untreated Al-Anonism. And yet, I held on to the belief that I was blaming everything. Oh, no, that it was his fault. And this particular day, the floodgates just opened, and I realized. And Jen had always, my first sponsor, had always said to me, we're going to talk about you pre-Bob, because then we're not talking about his disease. We're talking about what you brought to the marriage. But see, I was always one of those people that I was either responsible for everything, or I was totally guileless. I never was in the middle. So it was either all his fault, or in joking, I was responsible for the Vietnam War. I mean, you know, I would swing back and forth between those two, but there was never that place that I want to live in, that middle ground, that place where I can look at myself honestly, I can be culpable, I can be open, and I can also set some boundaries. That's that place for me that I like to swing, not over here. I'm not a person who's ever way out here or there. I'm comfortable in medium, which is also interesting because my whole family either goes all the way fast or stop. You know, we have three boys and Bob, and they're wired very differently than I am. And I love them to pieces, but we really are wired differently. So when I did take my fifth step and my fourth step, I got a freedom that I never knew I would get. Because, see, up until then, I was a phony. In my meeting, I told everyone, no, I didn't tell them, but I let them assume that I had done a 4 and a 5. And the longer I was in, the more they assumed. Well, they assumed wrong. And I didn't lie to them, but I allowed that assumption. And as a result, I knew I was a phony. So not only when I got done did I know more about me and who I am and what I'm about, but I was real. I was authentic. And that's what I live for. I don't want to be a liar. I don't want to misinform you. I don't want to mislead you. I want to tell you the truth. And when I tell the truth, I'm the best I can be, and I think if you're in my company, you're the best you can be. I'm going to turn it over. Okay. Thank you.
And I'll take it back whenever you want. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm still Barbara, Grateful Alanine. I debated whether this fit in today or not, but I think it does because it shows you who I was when I first came in here. These are my 12 steps before Al-Anon. Number one, I admitted that I was powerful over others and that your lives were certainly unmanageable. Two, came to believe that I was the one that could restore you to sanity. Three, made a decision that you should turn your will over to me and I would take care of you. Four, made a searching and fear-filled inventory of everyone that I knew and found them lacking. Five, admitted to God, myself, and anyone that would listen the exact nature of your wrongs. Six, identified your defects of character and became willing to assist you in removing all of them. Seven, humbly, assisted you in removing your defects of character except when to do so would cause me harm. Eight, made a list of everyone that had harmed me and vowed to get even with them all. Nine, waited for everyone to make direct amends to me. 10, continue to take your inventory and when you were wrong, promptly pointed it out. 11, sought through martyrdom, mothering, managing and manipulating to improve your conscious contact with me, asking only that you read my mind and carry out my wishes. And 12, having had a complete emotional, physical, and spiritual breakdown as a result of this type of living, I tried to drag all those I loved down with me and get sympathy and pity from all who would listen.
Wow.
And Al-Anons don't usually think that we're sick when we come to the program. So, you know, when I think back at the program in general, you know, the 12th step, which talks about our practicing the principles in all our affairs, starts with a spiritual awakening. You know, and my experience through the years, I've sponsored a lot of people, and I lose a lot of Al-Anons right after they do the fifth step. Certainly, there's a lot of them that never get to that point, but I lose a lot of them after they do the fifth step because suddenly they realize, oh, wait a minute, I have to change too. And most of us have this secret, you know, belief that if we stay around Al-Anon long enough, we're going to find the secret mystery in the back of the closet that's going to help us control you, you know, or fix you or make some kind of magical thing where we find out that really it was y'all all along. But that's not the truth. So many people in Al-Anon, and certainly me, you know, I came in, I had no resentments, at least I thought. You know, I believed in God. You know, I was here to kind of audit the course. I thought about writing the Cliff Notes version of Al-Anon when I first came in. But I got sicker as I stuck around because I began to really see who I was and where I'd come from. If I handed each of you a piece of paper and asked you to write what practicing the principles meant to you, I bet I would get 150 different answers. You know, I think there's just, you know, what that exactly means to us in our own life is part of what is revealed to us by working the steps. When we get to that 12th step, we find out what those principles are, and part of it goes back to our own beliefs and our own moral codes and our own standards of living and our spiritual beliefs come to how we look at those principles that we really practice in our life. You know, when I look at the program in general, the steps are all about finding our own recovery. The traditions are the principles for healthy relationships. And when I consider the principles of which I live by, a lot of them are also found in the traditions. And over the years, a lot of them are also found in the concepts. You know, one of the ones that Dick and I kid about is if you're given a responsibility, then it's your right that you get to make. It's the right of decision. If I ask him to go to the grocery store for me and tell him I need yogurt, then whatever brand he brings home, I've given him the right to buy the yogurt, so I can't tell him he bought the wrong one. You know, there's just simple little lessons we learn in all 36 of our principles. But over the years, I never really realized what working the principles in my life would bring and what I would have to go through when I first came in to the program. In 2005, my mom and dad died. Our dog of 18 years died. Dick's mom died. He was diagnosed with esophageal cancer, and he lost his ability. He lost his ability to work for a long time, and we lost our home. You know, there was a lot that happened in that year. Actually, this Woodstock kind of grew out of that. Dick and I really wanted something to put our energies into. We both served as area delegates, and we wanted to put some, that would help families in recovery to continue to work the program after that those initial years. And that's kind of how this came to be, that along with going to a couple of the other Woodstocks that had already been birthed. But when I think about practicing the principles today, what God has allowed me to learn weren't lessons I thought I was going to ever have to learn. You know, before cancer, Dick and I had a big house in Buckhead. We now live in a little house that we rent in Douglasville. You know, and there's been so many gifts in the middle of all that. Two Christmases ago, I couldn't have told you at the time, and really still can't, why we went through what we went through. Dick and I had three vehicles, and they were all old. And one of them he totaled in an accident. One of them the transmission went on, and one of them the engine went on, all in about 2 months. And we ended up with no vehicle at all, no ability to get one. And we had moved to Douglasville, and where we were, we could walk to the grocery store, we could walk to the bank, we could walk most everywhere we needed to go. And both of us were at one point, you know, wondering what is it that we did wrong. And also, many people in the program, we found, were judgmental of our financial condition. You know, it's kind of like if you don't... It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be rich just because you're sober or just because you're serene and in the program. And we found a lot of judgment from people we weren't really expecting. But the Christmas we had that year, we got two Marie Callender's chicken pot pies And we found out that they were showing It's a Wonderful Life at our local theater for a dollar. So, and it's the mall's not real close. It's about a two and a half mile walk. But we walked to the mall, and we watched It's a Wonderful Life, which we had seen many, many times on TV, but never in the movie theater. We sobbed through most of the movie. And we came back and ate our chicken pot pies, and it was a wonderful Christmas. You know, it wasn't a Christmas that I had ever thought I would have before in the program, but it was where God took us at the time. And learning to simplify your life, and learning what's important and what's not important, is, I hope none of you have to go through it, but truly, learning what's important in our lives is what happened in the middle of all that. I learned last year just how important it was for me to remember that, yes, God gave me the ability to work, but if I was working for a company that I could not respect, I couldn't work for them anymore. And I've been working in the treatment industry for 30 years, and I won't get into too much of it, but I'm very sad with a lot of the things that are going on right now. And I came to recognize I was working for a facility that I could not morally, ethically work for anymore. They were doing things that I just didn't feel like was going to help anybody get sober. So I made a decision to leave. And it was all about principles. It was about how this program has worked in my life, that God would take care of me if I was willing to make the motion to leave. I know a lot of people that continue to work for places they don't believe in anymore, but I really just could not do that particularly. The idea that I could work for a place that might kill somebody was just not something that I could do. It's been a journey to figure out what's next in our lives. I'm working on a book. I've done a lot of speaking. I've done some consult work. I have married 100 couples this year. When I came to the first Woodstock, I'd been to seminary and I was a minister, but I hadn't done much with it. And I got ordained shortly after the first Woodstock. I've done a number of funerals, but I've probably done 500 weddings. In our county, I'm the first name alphabetically on the list of people that can do weddings at the courthouse. And I get a lot of calls, and I could probably write a book about weddings. You know, there's one that I actually finished in the ambulance as the woman had gone into labor. Her water broke during the ceremony, and she said, but I have to be married before I birth the baby. So I finished the ceremony with them in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. There was the teenagers that looked like they were about 17, and they had 20 members of their family. They were all there. I had a feeling all of them had shotguns in their car. You know, and there's the couples that would roll out of bed in the morning and say, you know, maybe we should get married. And they, you know, seriously, no makeup, not even brush their hair. They would call and say, could you come marry us? You know, and I would look at them and go, did they think anything about the fact maybe they want to take a picture today? But it's been a tremendous joy to be able to be part of Uniting Families. And this particular conference has become very much about families. Over the years, AA and Al-Anon have become more and more separate, and I don't think that was ever the desire of our founders. We have a family system where the whole family can get well, and more I see, at least in my meetings, people coming into Al-Anon to see if there's any way they can get somebody sober, and when they figure out that they're going to have to change, they just divorce the person and move on. And that didn't used to be that way when I first came in the program. I'm very grateful there's so many couples that come to this, this particular Woodstock. Dick and I in our program really try to look at what's best for us and not just what's best for me or what's best for him. You know, in looking at working the principles together, we really do try to make decisions that work best for us as a couple. We have spent a lot of time looking at purpose. You know, what is our individual purpose? What is our purpose as a couple? You know, individually, I mean, I feel like my purpose is to be basically what the Big Book says, to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And whatever happens in my life, you know, that is truly behind what I feel my purpose is. My purpose is being a helpmate to Dick, is to be a safe harbor, to be a place where we can care and love each other and be there for each other in adversity and in celebration. And that's become a tremendous gift. And in thinking about the holidays in general, there's a silly... Have any of you seen Stuart Saves His Family? Okay. It's a crazy movie, but Stuart Smiley was a character on Saturday Night Live, and he's in this particular movie. He's in OA, Al-Anon, Debtors Anonymous, and Adult Children of Alcoholics. And he decides he needs to do an intervention on his father, and it doesn't go too well. It's a crazy movie, but one of the lines in there has always stuck with me, and he said, "Alcoholism is a threefold disease: Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's." And depending on who your family is, that may fit and it may not, but it definitely has in my own. And I learned that the best way to celebrate the holidays was to have no particular expectations. You know, just to live in the moment and to live in the day and not to expect it to be the best one or the worst one, but to celebrate each moment as it goes. And I'm going to turn it back to Linda for a minute, see if she has anything to share.
Oh, thank you. Well, that was certainly an example of honesty and integrity. Thank you very much. Let's see. Oh, I know. I want to go back to that New Year's resolution. If any of you think that's a great idea, it's a great idea until May. And when May comes, at least for me, I realized I had to do another fifth step. And I have to say I reneged that. But the next year I recommitted and I did it. But that was a very important thing for me to see how much fear I had again. And it would have been probably my third fifth step. But just that balking, it not wanting to find out anything more. I got enough information. I don't need to know more. The other thing I wanted to talk about, when Barbara and I did this, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, I'm not real good on the time, but Sandy was here. And we talked, I think our topic was acceptance. And we both, I think, talked about what that meant to us. And when we got done with it, Sandy said to me, "Can I talk to you about that afterward?" I said, "Sure." You know, and he said, I've got another way to look at that." And I said, "Okay." So what I had talked about was sort of what I just said, you know, stay in the moment and be in cooperation with God. And when something comes up that you don't really like, you know, just accept it and know that it's part of your lesson and it's part of what you're supposed to be learning at this particular phase, and sort of accept it in a joyous way was pretty much the theme that I had used. And so when Sandy said, could I give you another idea? I said, sure. And he said, well, you know, he said, let's say you're working and you're working five days a week, 8 hours a day, and your boss calls you into the office and he says, you know, you've been doing a great job. He said, I'd like to double your salary, and you're only going to have to work 3 days a week. Sandy said, would you have to accept that? And I said, I got it. In other words, I was using, and maybe you also, was using the word acceptance only with things I didn't like. It was a word that something happens I don't really want it to be, I'm going to have to learn how to accept it. And he said, how about if you have acceptance go through all of your life, whatever God's plan is for you, and maybe you'll have a different word rather than acceptance. And that has stuck with me, how I use the word acceptance around something negative. And I use the word, I think, more like celebration around something that I liked, that's good, I like that one. Let's go with that a little bit more. And maybe just to know that that's just part of God's plan for me too. And maybe just to learn from it, to have more insights into that. So that has been really helpful for me. And I think acceptance, if we start with acceptance, and you touched on it about, you know, you and Dick being a safe haven. I think that's something that, you know, as we age and as we have more things that are somewhat limitations that we're not really thrilled about. But to be able to do that, we happen to be in partnership, and that's such a blessing. So when one of us is down, usually the other one isn't, and so we have a way of sort of bringing each other around. But relationships is where we show up the most, and relationships is where we have to have the principles being alive and well and in practice. Because I don't know about your day, but sometimes mine aren't exactly the way I have planned. But if I stay in that celebration of, okay, what can I learn from this? What is the plan here? Can I have that wonderful Christmas that you described? I don't know if I would have been that brave and that strong. I tend to be a complainer, and I wonder how I would have dealt with that. So I don't want a chance. I really don't. But
I don't want you to either.
I know. But yet, you know, the honesty and integrity and the beauty of which you described that is the way I want to live. And so if there's nothing else I say, it's just that in step three, my job is to find out the plan for me. What is your will for me? And may I cooperate with it? And while I'm cooperating, may I be cheerful and joyful and an example of all the blessings I've been given. That's what I want. And for Christmas this year, I'm sure I have expectations, and we'd be lying to say I don't, but I have a whole lot less than I used to have. I remember our first Christmas, or maybe second, I don't really know which one, but I had this expectation of putting that Christmas tree up, and I was going to be in this sort of sheer little outfit, and it was going to be just, I mean, I had a script written. And it was, God damn it, hold the tree straight, and, you know, and the two of us were just, and I wasn't wise enough to have cherished that moment. And yet I remember it. And I don't have many expectations, and maybe some of it is that so many of them have been met. I have really lived a very blessed life. But my job is to pass that blessing and that kindness and that love on. And so if I have an expectation, like I said, and I know I do, because I have expectations about everything, and many times they're just invisible to me, but I hope that this year I can be more of a blessing to others and let that be what I pass on. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
The job that I had for a while was to represent a treatment center that was going to be a Christian treatment center and to call on churches and pastors and Christian counselors. And And regardless of the fact that it ended up not being the job I needed long term, it gave me so many gifts. I've not told my whole story here. Some of you heard it, but I graduated from seminary the year that the denomination that I had chosen to serve passed a resolution that Eve was the first to sin, and therefore women should not lead over men, and women in ministry would be strongly discouraged. And I couldn't find a job as a minister. I had worked all the way through college, but I couldn't find a job in a church. One of the interviews, and this is the only thing I'll share from way back, but one of the interviews I went to was somewhere in Alabama. I know we have a lot of Alabama people here. I don't think any of you were in this room, and the way my brain works, I don't remember what town it was. Or the name of the church or anything. But I went into a fellowship hall, and there was a big circle with about 40 people in chairs and one in the middle, and they ushered me into the one in the middle, and the person that was directly across from me said, "We just wanted to see what someone like you, a woman who would have the audacity to apply for this job, would look like." And I didn't know what to say. Now, I've thought of a lot of things since then, but... what I said was, I hope you're going to pay my expenses, because I'd driven from Louisville, Kentucky down to this church. And from this part of the circle, a man threw some money out on the floor. And today I wouldn't have picked it up, but I needed to get home. So, I picked it up and I walked out of the circle, and that became God to me, and I didn't even recognize that it had happened. There's many things that have happened in my life that had in the direction and all that happened to lead me into working in the addiction field. There was no mistakes in my background, But what I got to do in working for this treatment center for those 6 months was to walk in and out of churches, including the denomination that I used to serve, and sit down and talk to ministers. I talked to a minister, and he was the associate pastor for pastoral care in a large church. And I said, "Well, how many people that come to see you, is their problem have something to do with alcoholism or addiction?" And he said, "Well, actually, none. And I said, "Really?" I said, "What kind of questions do you ask them?" And he'd never ask if anybody had any addiction in their life. He just let them tell him whatever the program was and prayed with them. That's about what he did. So I challenged him. And I said, "For the next week, why don't you ask them, what's going on? Is there any addiction issues, depression issue, anything going on in your life?" And he called me back a week later and he said everyone that had come into his office had some kind of problem with alcoholism or addiction. And they were so filled with fear and shame, they couldn't even tell their pastor what was really going on. So I hope that through doing that, some people that need to be in our rooms will find them. But regardless, what happened in the middle of all that is I really thought that I had completely gotten over and completely forgiven what happened to me in the church, but I don't think I did until I walked through visiting all those churches and making some friends with some ministers. I've actually gone and spoken at some of those churches since then, and I have two of them that I'm now their consult for any kind of addiction or behavioral issues or whatever that happens. So God, there was no mistake there. Even when we feel like, you've stumbled over something and realized that maybe this wasn't what I was supposed to do, there's no mistakes in our life. God takes what happens in our lives and turns it into good. And if we're working the program and if we're practicing the principles, hey, we'll find our journey as we move. And that's become just a tremendous, exciting journey. Even when things aren't great, there's always There's always a reason for it. During that period of time, and I won't say that Dick and I are completely out of it, but we're certainly a lot farther away than from no cars and, you know, than we were. But during that period of time, I did a lot of readings of Mother Teresa and, you know, a lot of readings about poverty, you know, and about living close to God in poverty. There were a lot of spiritual leaders that did that. And, you know, what in stripping away of all the excess that you don't need, you really have to rely on God. And there's tremendous growth in my spiritual program during this time. I'll also tell you that, you know, all that grief that happened, you know, losing all those things, losing my parents and my dog, and walking through grief. I live these principles in whatever's going on in my life, you know, and I use the steps on grief. You know, we're powerless over death. There's just, you know, when it comes, it comes. There's not really anything we can do about it. And if we really look at the fact that the steps work for everything, they certainly work for grief and learning how to let go and to be grateful and to cherish the warm memories of those that have gone before us. And to let go of any resentment that still hangs on. And to truly forgive. I've done many, many, many workshops now to professional groups and to AA and Al-Anon groups on forgiveness. You know, the journey through our lives into forgiveness is what it's all about. And unless we can forgive the past, we can't really have reunion with our family. We can't have reunion with God if you're still stuck on resentment with God. I certainly had to do a fourth and fifth step just on my relationship with God during my life and practicing those principles in order to get rid of what happened to me in churches. These principles will work with anything in our life, and I'm reminded of that over and over again and very grateful for it.
Thank you. You know, I was just thinking if we could take all the principles, you know, 12 of them, whichever ones you've chosen, and sort of put them in our Christmas stocking, and the last 12 days, you know, just pull one out every day and just have that be what we're going to do for the day. And you know what? Maybe we'd keep pulling out even when Christmas came and went. We have been given a program to learn how to live, and we've been given a program to allow us to get in touch with a power greater than ourselves. And for that, I think we are all just so truly blessed. And it's been so much fun doing this with you, and next time we won't prepare either.
And maybe Sonia can help us write a new version of the 12 Days of Christmas. Okay. All right, thank you very much, and we're going to stand and close with the Lord's Prayer.
Put it out first.